It is that time of a week again when we get to the Esports Central podcast. We're back for another episode, this time number 86. We are recording on a Sunday night. Lockdown has messed up our schedule completely, but it's an episode I'm very, very excited for. And I'm not alone. I'm joined by my man, Mr. Prophecy. How are you doing, lad?
I'm doing pretty well. You know, getting a little bit long in the tooth now with lockdown, where you sort of, at the start, it felt like, okay, you know, we're doing this all for the good of everybody. And then by like week 6 and 7, it started to get like, I just kind of want to go out on occasion, you know, not to the shops to be able to do something. But it's best for everybody that we all stay inside. So it does sometimes get difficult, but I guess it is for a good cause.
It is for a good cause. Lockdown has been hard, not going to lie. I think a lot of sympathy has to go out for a lot of people who also don't have that financial security and things during these lockdowns. Like, you see in the US, like 30 million people unemployed. South Africa, we have our whole range of issues. So it is rough in a lot of ways. We're getting all serious on the podcast talking about random things, but it is just a reality right now that everybody has to deal with. I think at least hopefully the country opens up again to stage 3 at the end of March. We'll see how that goes. It'll be nice to see a prophecy.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've got a plan ahead now. I think that's what everybody was just really getting kind of miffed about, is we never really knew. It was just sort of like, okay, well, when Mr. Ramaphosa appears on our TV screens, we all know what's going on. But he just didn't do that for quite a while. So we at least have, you know, some sort of path in front of us that we can follow now. So that'll help us quite a bit.
Yeah, it's cool. And like we mentioned in every other freaking podcast where we spoke about lockdown or COVID or whatever, we're not doctors or anything, but I do believe there was a lot of prep going on in the quiet time from our government and things to make sure things are better once the virus really goes viral. So let's hope those pan out. What hasn't panned out, or actually something that has panned out for us sports fanatics, is the Bundesliga actually came back, Prophecy.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the weirdest things I've seen, though, in quite a while, is watching. I mean, I watched, I think it was Dortmund versus, was it Schalke, I think it was.
Yeah.
It's just, like, very, very odd. You're sort of like watching an under-23s rugby game, you know, like, voices echoing throughout the stadium. You can actually hear the ball being kicked pretty loud. There are, like, echoes. It just felt very, very odd to watch a professional-level football game with nobody in the stadium. And it's quite a change. Necessary, obviously. Can't argue with that. But I do think it helped a lot of people that have been crying out for that kind of entertainment, because the lack of sport really does affect, I think, quite a few people.
Yeah, I feel like if there was sport going on during this whole lockdown, like the usual tennis circuit, basketball circuit, Premier League, like, it would actually be so enjoyable because you have endless entertainment, but without it, it's a bit rough. I do think sports are in a bit of a rough position because you can get, like, people back into the sport and things, but it's still, like, super risky. Like, I don't know if they have locker room procedures or anything that they have to kind of avoid those kind of things.
It is very, very hectic. I mean, I don't know how much of the Bundesliga that you watch, but, like, every player was, like, the subs were sitting, like, with spaces of 3 seats between them. Each one, as soon as they walked off the field, they were, like, given a check and a face mask to, like, wear. Every single member of staff on the field has, like, a face mask. So it did look pretty hectic. I mean, is that enough? We don't know. But the Bundesliga felt that it was enough that they could go ahead. And
Germany is one of those countries that also has, like, a very strong, like, medical setup. They're very efficient. Like, they were tested, like, in the millions before it even went viral in Germany. So maybe the Bundesliga is one of the few places I'm like, all right, you guys test it out. Let's see how it goes, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Italy's due to start soon. I think they announced they could get their practice sessions on the go. And then I think Britain or England is June, I think it is, that they're going to restart.
But see how it goes. I saw a really disgusting thing on Twitter the other day. Like, a lot of the players were talking, like, obviously because it's been all in lockdown now. So a lot of, even though these guys are superstars from Man City and stuff, they have, like, their parents and stuff living with them. And then, like, a lot of players are, like, scared. Like, Aguero was, like, he's scared to go and start playing again. What if he gets this and he brings it home and he kills one of his parents or something like that because they're too old to fight the disease? Then people on fucking Sky Sports Twitter start tuning him. Oh, you get paid millions and, like, oh, you're a wuss. And I was like, what the hell is wrong with you people? These family members could be dying and you're calling this guy a wuss and stuff. And I was like, I mean, hey, that's enough Twitter for today.
Didn't Pep Guardiola's mother die? as far as I remember, I think she passed away. I don't know if it was from COVID, but I know that she passed away while he was stuck in England under the lockdown. And she passed away a few weeks back now.
Oh, that's pretty sad. I didn't actually hear about that. So condolences to Guardiola and the squad there.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to take it to like esports, for example, Monte Cristo, his son was born, might have been about a month ago. And he put up a Twitter post saying that, you know, he wasn't allowed to attend the birth of his son, which I can confirm in South Africa. If your wife or partner gives birth at the moment, you're not allowed to attend the birth.
Yeah.
So like that's very, very rough. And Monty's grandmother died, what was it, 2 days ago?
And yeah, I think she passed away. I saw the tweet as well.
Again, like, not a lot to see her. Now, he says, thankfully, thanks to the power of technology, his grandmother was able to see his son. But, you know, it's still a terrible situation. You've missed now two incredibly impactful event in your life. So he misses the death of his grandmother and he misses the birth of his son. It's horrible. And he's just one amongst millions of people, just happens to be better known on the internet. So it's very, very rough all around for everybody.
Yeah, I was even thinking...
And to like attack people for that situation is also like utterly stupid.
It is crazy. It is crazy because it's literally something rich, poor, like whatever, you all have to go through it. Obviously, I think South Africa, it's been a big case made that for the poor, it'll be significantly worse with the likes of medical aid and stuff because we don't have the greatest public health care and things. But just in general, it's something that we all have to live with. Got to do our parts, guys. But not to be preachy, on the other side of the sports spectrum, I also the discussion around the NBA coming back was also very interesting because NBA is very different from a sport like football where you have like 11 players, you have a big bench and stuff. Like you have it's five guys on the court, right? So if one of your, let's say they start the NBA season again, right? And then LeBron gets COVID now. How, like, it's such a big hit for a team that like the Lakers from being the number one team in the conference will just go to be dumpstered here. So there's a lot of different risks for the different sports as well.
Yeah, I mean, the smaller the number of players on the field, it will have a much, much larger effect on the team as a whole if one of those players goes down, especially if it's your best player.
100%. Funnily enough, I know I'm biased because obviously I'm a tennis fan, but I think tennis is one of the few sports that actually could come back because you never, ever interact with your opponent. Like, you guys are on opposite sides of the court, you know? So that would be cool, but we'll see how things go. Sports coming back is the least of our worries right now because we got real, like, some hardcore esports news this week. I mean, we kind of recording an emergency episode on Sunday because we had to get it out. But the biggest thing that came up, well, there was two things, but the first one we'll talk about is newbie former TI4 champions.
All I'm going to say is we were having a conversation about things like this over the last 2 weeks, were we not, Camille?
We were. It felt like it feels so good every week to record a podcast and the things you spoke about last week come up the next week and it's like, yes, I'm an oracle. Don't hate me.
The problem is it's sort of like we talk about the dangers of it the 1 week and then in the time between the podcasts, it's like, oh, did you know that this actually happened? It's just like, why is this a thing? Please explain to me why is, you know, it's like, why is everything we're talking about at the moment just actually occurring rather than like, this could happen and it's going to be very bad if it does happen. So let's please not allow it to ever happen. It's like, nope, it's going to happen. It's definitely going to happen this week.
It's like why our tone of Overwatch League conversation has shifted, listeners, is that it's not, we don't want to be right. We actually don't want to be right anymore. It has to be
like,
wrong.
Like, the thing is, like, we memed a lot about the Overwatch League because they made a lot of decisions that esports just in general hasn't worked that way. You know, it's like, it's sort of like, oh, we're gonna play a game of soccer with, and it's like, we're not gonna have any defenders, we're gonna have six midfielders. But why? That's like, you need a defender. No, we don't need a defender. We've decided, our research has told us that defenders score fewer goals, so we don't need them because we want more goals. It's just like, you're failing to understand how this, like, how, you know, just decades and years of experience have taught us. And that's unfortunately what Overwatch did. And I mean, if you looked at it, it should have done better than it did, but it hasn't. And it really is in dire straits at the moment as an esport that people spent $20 million to get into.
True, true. Although, let's not get side rails. It's not about Overwatch today. Back to the topic of newbie. So newbie, former TI champions, TI 4, TI 7, runner-ups, you know, a
mad money orgs. Mad money orgs. If we're talking about, yeah, big money, newbie was founded by the... He's like certainly like one of the wealthiest people in China. It's like the son of one of the wealthiest people in China.
Yeah, so a massive powerhouse in China. Also, a team that formed the CDA Players Association this year. This is why this news is so ironic, guys. So they came together in China, the top orgs, to create a league, you know, to push forward the scene. And that team, newbie, were two. Well, the former TI champion on it, Moogie, and Faith, and the former TI runner-up in Moogie, have been banned. I think the last three players were Wakesy, XQ, and I just have to Google to find the last name. But all these five players have been banned by Imba TV, and I think Mars TV. I'm not sure. I think that's the other company called. And then the organization itself has also been banned from all these things. So there's no decision that's come out from Valve yet. But the reason they've all been banned is because of match fixing. From the official statements is that they have a clear evidence that on Imba TV side that they even have chat logs and stuff, so they know it's proven that it's fixed. So this is like serious business, Prof.
Yeah, I mean, we were mentioning just last week that, you know, that this is one of the dangers, is that betting companies can come in, and ideally you'd think that the more money that a player can make, the less likely they are to actually engage in betting. And the fact that Newbie, one of the wealthiest orgs in the world, well, certainly backed by one of the wealthiest people in the world, gets caught. We've got a TI winner on this team. That guy won, what, northwards of $1 million when they won. So the fact that he's one of the people involved and this org is one of the groups involved is like massive, massive news. Because the last time this kind of thing happened, Valve just unilaterally banned these players that were involved in CSGO and in Dota forever. You know, they were removed and they're never allowed to play at an official Valve sponsored tournament again, and that's had a massive effect, particularly in CSGO, a little bit less so in Dota. But I mean, Newbie not being able to have a team in Dota, they were founded specifically to win Dota and they won their first ever TI, so that
is the first year of formation actually.
Insane that a team this storied in the game can be banned. Or could potentially face an outright ban if Valve sees fit to do so.
And it's funny because last week we were speaking about the betting in esports as well as a big proponent to make tournaments viable for throwing for the tier 2 teams and stuff. But this is obviously, Newbie are not a tier 1 Dota team anymore in terms of the way they play Dota. But still, it's a massive org, and two of these players are millionaires, mind you. Moogie and Faith have made more than $1 million in playing career. So it's not like, oh, you know, I'm a tier 2 Ukrainian player, like struggling to eat and shit. I need to make money. These guys are making the money.
They've been to the top. So it's staggering that it's the level of player involved in this sort of situation.
Yeah, so they got the Dota world up in a tizzy, and a lot of people are rightfully sad about the situation because it's like, yo, if these guys are doing it, how deep can it run? And that was kind of the conversation last week, because I think, and this is full-on conspiracy theory time, bookies, please don't come and take me out and shit. I'm just a South African nobody, okay? I ain't famous, but I think this shit runs a lot deeper than just Newbie. I mean, I've casted a lot of, like, not a lot of Russian Dota, but I've casted a fair share of Russian Dota. You see a lot of Chinese games and a lot of, like, I think one of the better casters in for the China region, B-Cop. He's not the most famous guy, but he cast more Chinese Dota than anybody. And he was like, you know what, it's sad what happened to Newbie and shit, but let me tell you, as somebody who watches so many of these games, he thinks it's quite rampant, the match fixing and match throwing. So
you yourself have said that you've seen like suspicious things going on in some of the games that you've casted, haven't you?
100%. So there's games you watch and it's like, okay, you know, this could be a throw, right? But the problem with Dota is that there's so many variables in play. So you can't distinctively say, okay, this 100% this team threw, or 100% this is what happened. I mean, sometimes, you know what, maybe your core player forgot to pop his BKB or something. But there's other times where you look at things, and apparently this Newbie one, Kyle is quoted saying, to be the most blatant throw he's ever seen, or fix, sorry, use the word fix, that he's ever seen. So it's also like, low effort throwing happening right now.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, right? This game that they were specifically banned for. So this has actually been running about 2 months, guys, for anybody that doesn't know. And it was first brought to light by the actual captain of the team that Newbie won TI with, Xiao8.
And, fucking legend in the scene, mind
yeah,
you.
Yeah, so like Xiao8 is one of the most storied players in Dota, just outright. If generally considered to be one of, if not like the top four greatest captains that Dota's ever seen. One TI with Newbie, as I just mentioned. And this happened in, I think it was February, Camille, if I remember correctly, like early February, mid-February, around about there.
And yeah, start of the year, somewhere
he
there.
He famously said something to the effect of, if this game isn't fixed, I'll eat my own shit. And he said that on stream while watching this game, and he was like outraged because he's like, this is 100% bullshit. Like 100%, like it's just not possible that this isn't fixed. And that's apparently the game that is now been, Newbie's been found guilty of throwing. The players have been banned, obviously. Org's been banned. And, I mean, it takes a lot of stones to say something like that, because you can be one of the most storied players in a game. There's a lot of big orgs that, if this does go higher, as Camille says, you don't want to be on their bad side.
100%. So that's part of why this is such a big deal. But the other part of it is something we kind of mentioned last week, but I don't know if we went in-depth enough, right? So let's talk about the kind of bet you can make in Dota 2, Prof. Because let's be real. There's a number of Western betting sites that we know of. I mean, fucking Lootbet, EGB, fucking gg.bet, cyberbet, like this is just going off the top of my head. Not even got a fucking list with me or anything.
Those are the legitimate ones as well.
Legitimate for esports standards, at least, Laval. And then there's Chinese betting sites.
Those are the well-known ones, yeah. And then you get the Chinese ones, you get the Russian ones, you get, I mean, there's dozens that aren't controlled. Let's be frank.
So let's say, for example, yeah, there's 10 different betting sites that all these fucking fixers use, right? Now, there's 10 different betting sites, and the kind of things you can bet on, Prof, are first blood, most kills at 10 minutes, who gets the first Roshan, like all these normal things in Dota 2, right? At what minute first blood gets claimed, like... There's some matches that people are saying you can watch a game where there's a big, like, where you can bet that the game will end at 40 minutes. Games even boring farm fest. 36 minutes comes, team gets completely wiped. Next thing you know, the game's over. And it's like, okay, I'm not going to say that's fixed. But that looks really fucking sketchy.
Just, it's dodgy. It's just, I mean, it's like just a complete, I mean, maybe you could use cricket there. You know, it's like, are you going at like 102 for one and then you're like 182 all out? Huh? Like, I mean, sure, it is possible, like, for that to happen, but it's just statistically unlikely to consistently have situations like that.
So what gets me here is that this is something I was worried about in the tier 2. We spoke about this last week, like, in the tier 2 scene, betting and stuff is happening, so much money is going through. But now, if millionaires, literal fucking millionaires, are throwing games, how high do you think the number is of the amount getting betted in these matches, dog? Like,
well, I mean,
I think
the problem
it could
is
be
it's
an
also,
insane
like,
amount of money.
I mean, the thing is, it's also, is it them? Is it the players themselves that are getting involved in this? Because, I mean, it's obviously happened where, you know, players, you know, get in over their head, they spend all their money and they've got nothing left and they have to take to doing things like this to get out of trouble. You know, I mean, how many stories have there been of players that you'd think make mad money and then a year or two after the league, they're bankrupt type of thing? So, it's not beyond the realms of reason that that is a possibility, that these guys could be in monetary trouble. The more sinister aspect is if it's the org instructing them to do this. Because that is a possibility. I'm not saying it happened. Not saying it happened, but that is a possibility in cases like this.
So I also have been thinking along the same lines. I don't believe that it's just these players going out of their way to do what they want to make a quick buck, right? I think it has to be a lot more sinister. If you're fixing games, there's so many bets and shit being placed. The org has to know. I agree with the org getting banned here. Everything comes to fruition and it's all true and perfect world and Valve, and along with CDA and Imba TV banned these guys. I'm with it. But I also do believe the org has to be held accountable. You cannot not know that this shit goes on, right? That is something I do not believe at the slightest. And I want to know how deep are they involved in this betting and scandals as well? Like, are the org betting money themselves? Are they instructing their players to throw? Obviously, this is all hypotheticals. I'm not saying factually here, but the rabbit hole can run deep, Prof.
It can go very, very deep, and it can take many twists and turns. But I mean, that's the worry, is because, like we're saying, the fact that it's this high level of a team, it's this high level of player involved in this sort of situation, opens a lot of very dangerous, or, you know, not dangerous questions, opens a lot of worrying questions for the scene as a whole, because you'd think that these are the kind of guys that are immune to that kind of thing. It's not the top of the league that, you know, it's not the best tennis player in the world or the best football player in the world that you'd expect to be getting into betting scandals like this, because those are the kind of guys you think would be immune. They just don't. That it's not as necessary for them to get themselves into economic situations where they, you know, sitting in that kind of situation, they make more than enough of a salary to be somewhat immune to this. So
it is scary.
It's the equivalent of people busting. I mean, where would you put newbie? It's like catching Dortmund, Borussia Dortmund, the soccer team, like in a match fixing scandal with half of their players. Like it would be unthinkable to think that, like, to even contemplate that could occur.
Yeah, it is something that is just shocking. And I mean, in sports, we've had our massive scandals, right? Fucking Juventus have been banned for match fixing and shit before. It's not like big names haven't been caught for this, but my thing in Dota, and why I think this conversation is so important and is going to be so fucking relevant going into the future, is that where is the consequence for this behavior, right? Like, obviously, the players are getting fucked. They're going to get banned. Maybe the newbie orc's going to be banned. But you, if the other guys, like, inside, like, betting on, like, fucking known throws, the betting companies and shit, if just you, if you want to go and bet on Dota games that you know is going to be fixed because you got an inside tip, like, where the fuck is the consequence? Who gives a shit? Like, in football, why betting happens? Like, in Maradona's book, he says that he used to get fucking, like, mobs used to come to him and say, they know where his kid goes to school, we'll take you out if you don't score at this minute, or do this, or whatever. So, like, they, in the real world, betting is fucking, there's massive consequences. But in esports, you can just do whatever you want. It's literally printing money at the stage. And who's going to be checking to verify Tier 2 Dota games? Let's be fucking honest here. Nobody, not one person in the world right now cares enough about this thing.
I mean, this brings up the other thing that we've been talking about the last few weeks, is the devs' involvement. Because, you know, the last time Valve got involved with match fixing, it was just to unilaterally ban these players for all time without saying it's for all time. We just said they're banned until further notice. So when are you going to give us further notice? Never. So, you know, it's that kind of thing. That's the problem, is that they did that once and then they just walked off into the sunset thinking that they'd solved the problem. But it's like, but you haven't. You just dropped the hammer and then were like, okay, well, my job here is done, and then walked off. It's like, you're not creating a scene that will be more resistant to this kind of thing by creating an environment where these players have less pressure on them to get involved in match fixing, or the orgs get involved in match fixing, because they have, you know, like, what we were talking about TOs the past few weeks, and teams to a lesser extent, but what kind of money does a team have, or what kind of options does a team have to generate revenue at this point? Like, sure, the big ones, G2s of the world, the TSMs, they can run off of streamer contracts and they can run off merch and all the rest, but the smaller ones, and in this case, you do sort of have to include newbie. Like, newbie used to be great. They haven't been great for a couple of years now. What do they do? They don't have the kind of cash to keep paying these crazy salaries. Even in China, like, yeah, they're sponsored by a super rich guy, but the org still has to somehow pay for itself. It can't just, you know, feed away the money for all time. And unfortunately, these are the kind of things that can happen. Oh, match fixing. Well, you know, if you can make $500,000 for a single match fix, that could be the money to continue for the next 2 months.
I mean, we on this podcast have been big proponents about Tier 2 scenes and, like, support for the lower levels, especially in the Dota 2 world. I mean, there's probably more than 10 podcasts on the fucking esports central website where we talk about this shit, right? But at the same time, like, I feel like my eyes have recently been opened and I've become way more skeptical about this shit. Because like you say, if you can make $500,000 fucking fixing one match, Prof, just one match on all those different bets through all the different sites, how do you regulate this shit? Yeah, sure, you're a tier two team now who gets to play in a $10,000 tournament. It's just you and other tier two teams. Your chance to win is fairly fair. If you guys win, you take home $5,000. Every player is like set to eat for the month and shit. And there's another one coming up next month, so you're not too worried. But at the same time, if you can place a few simple bets, throw, and make that $10,000 back in one game, who's to say you wouldn't do that? I mean, in this We Play tournament now, so they had two divisions, right? Obviously, there's the top teams, the Secrets, the EGs, the Navis, whatever. And then there's a division, the lower division for CIS and EU. In the CIS scene, you have teams playing with players from other teams standing in. There's like all this fucking shady business going on all the time. And to one part, I agree with Prophecy. I'm not going to flake them and say like, oh, this is bad commitment and you guys are not professionals and all that bullshit. No. It's tier two Dota. It's rough out there. But at the same time, like, yo, where's the line we draw? You know, Prof?
Yeah. I mean, the problem is it shouldn't be acceptable. But at the same case, it's understandable. And that's what's worrying to us, is that it shouldn't be understandable. It shouldn't, you know, it shouldn't be like, oh, this guy threw because he doesn't have money to eat on the table.
It's just right, like, I get you. That like, is fair.
We don't want that, is that not situation. Disputed. Like, we just don't want that situation to ever occur. And, you know, to deny that it doesn't happen in real sports is, I think, also foolish. It probably does, just we don't know about it as much. But esports as a whole is the only thing really running at the moment. And scandals like this are going to do severe damage to esports in general. And we need to be so damn careful that these kind of things are... That we have procedures for dealing with this. Hey, newbie, you got caught? Cool. All of these players banned for 2-3 years. And 2-3 years is enough. You don't want, a guy to be banned for making a $300 bet once off for the rest of all time. Because at that point, okay, well, then he might as well just keep, he might as well just keep knocking off bets against his own team for the next 3 years. And if he gets banned, well, he gets banned for life. If he gets caught for a $300 bet once off, he's going to, you know, he gets banned for life anyway, so might as well go whole hog, right? You want levels to this stuff, and that's unfortunately the thing that we've never seen from Valve in particular, but from just the esports scene in general. Now, some TOs have introduced different methods where they've said that, okay, well, you know, they'll ban, I think, first offense for an ESL event is something like, I think it's a 2-year ban. Second is a 5-year ban, and third time caught is a lifetime ban, which is fair. You just want steps to this so that players know that there are consequences that aren't just like, you don't want every sentence to be death for every single crime, because then one crime is as bad as the next. What difference do they make?
100%. I think that is a very fair and balanced take. But man, I just realized now going through this podcast how this newbie thing has like, it's affected me actually, like legitimately, because I think, like we spoke about it last week, right? The fact that how much money can be made in the betting. I was saying, like, if there's 500 people on stream, let's say 100 of them bet, it's like $10 a bet or some shit. Like, we did the math and all of that. But, like, because the reality in esports right now is that nobody knows how to make money. Like, it's the constant joke that orgs are literally a fucking, like, magnet for the money in your pocket. They just get sucked out, right? Yeah. It's a death ground for any financial stability. So like owning a team, running a third party event, which you'll get to a bit later on, those kind of things. And this betting now is like kind of counteracts that, because it's like quote unquote easy money, because it's money that can come quickly. There's variables you can control because you're fixing the things. It's not regulated, because like you said, in sports, I'm sure it happens as well, but yo, the consequences in sports are so big, because obviously the money is much bigger, so there's much more eyes on it, more monitoring and stuff. But man, oh man, for now, this is scary. The story will still evolve, so I'm sure we'll come back to it on the podcast once Perfect World and Valve make decisions.
Valve hasn't said anything. That's one thing we must be clear with. Valve hasn't said anything yet, and that's sort of why we're on a little bit of a timer, because the news came out, what is it, I think Friday morning or Friday afternoon, that this news dropped that newbie had been banned. And I think everybody's just sort of waiting on tenterhooks for Valve to come out, because again, Dev is the only one that gets final say over everything, and hopefully it's a reasonable take. I do think bans are in the offering. Permanent bans? I don't know. That's a story, I think, a debate for another day.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Well, I'm sure, like 90% sure, we'll bring this back up on the podcast when more details come out, the amount of money put down, Valve statement and such. For now, we will be moving on to our next topic, which is another hot topic of this podcast and something that we've also spoken about in the last 2 weeks. And it's a constant conversation in the world of esports, and it came up in the Dota 2 world. So Kyle, as always, Kyle on the panel, made a statement saying something on the lines of, yeah, it's rough to be a TL man when anybody can just go out there and stream some games. And I understand why Valve have the rules to get small people in. But when you have these bigger guys, and he didn't call anybody out by name on the panel, like bigger guys going out there, stealing like 40% of the revenue with their massive streams, having quarter of the thing, it makes TL's lives hard. So I understand why he's saying that. Obviously, the streamers in discussion were probably the Bulldogs and the Gork. Well, Gork obviously didn't say anything about it, like the smart man. And Bulldog had a stronger reaction than I think he needed to. But that sparked huge debate, right? We had almost everybody in the talent team from Dota having an opinion on this. Kyle went and wrote a Medium article. It was a small one. We had ESL's guys talking about, okay, broadcast rights now in esports and things. And it's a very nuanced, tough discussion, right, Prof? Because, like, when you look at all the things, there's a lot of facts on both sides, but there's no answers just yet.
Yeah, it's a very, very difficult situation to get answers for as well. Because of the whole fact, because of Valve's stance that you have to allow the smaller streamers to stream and all the rest, and or you have to allow the smaller guys to stream in that, you know, in the case that, like, it is actually streamers. Now, the fact that people that can get high volume streams such as Bulldog and Gork and the bigger Russian guys and the
Dendies of the world.
Yeah, the Dendies. And I mean, like, you're also thinking, especially in CSGO, you'll have the guys that are like the Brazilian streamers and all the rest. They get huge numbers on their streams as well. And the issue is that maybe it's not 40%. I think perhaps...
Yeah, no, that number was definitely wrong. I mean, let's not make any mistakes.
I do think that, like, Kyle just used it for effect, as in, like, oh, it's 40%, right. Just to make it sound a lot bigger than it actually is. But the simple fact of the matter is that it ruins any concept of a TO being able to sell exclusivity. You know, in South Africa, one of our biggest complaints at the moment is that DStv are the only guys that are allowed to show the English Premier League, right? And for that right, you have to pay DStv a stupid amount of money. What is it? I think it's 1,000 rand a month at the moment to watch the English Premier League. Now, if you don't do that, well, you're shit out of luck, boys. You're not going to be able to watch that league. But by paying DStv to do that, you give DStv an incentive to go to the English Premier League and buy the rights to showcase it. Or let's say, I think Sky Sports is actually the one that owns the overall rights. So Sky Sports pays up $4.2 billion to the Premier League to be the only one allowed to showcase 76 of the games. And then Sky Sports can then go and sell those rights to others, but those rights are paid for. So at the end of the day, the final viewer is the one paying somebody to get the right to watch that thing. And that only exists because one person at the very top has the exclusive right to showcase any of the games. So they can then sell those rights to others. But somebody's got to hold the exclusive right. And unfortunately, especially in Dota, little bit less so at the moment in CSGO, but does still have an effect, we don't have those exclusive rights to the TOs, which means that the TOs are absolutely screwed in their ability to negotiate with sponsors, in their ability to monetize the streams effectively as a result of that. And it comes down to the fact that because these, especially the bigger streamers, they can get away with it. Remember, the biggest streamer, he's already got exclusive rights. He gets sponsored for every hour that he's on there because it's his content. Now, the fact that you're taking a tournament organized by somebody else and you can show that as your content is, like, ludicrous, because the streamer doesn't pay any of the tournament costs. The streamer doesn't pay any of the costs to get the teams to the event, to organize the event, to do marketing for the event, And the streamer sponsors, well, they benefit massively because here's Mr. Streamer who's able to pull, let's say in the case of Bulldog, he gets 10,000 viewers on a stream while watching an ESL event and he's talking about the ESL event. Yes, the content that Bulldog owns, should own, in fact, is him talking about the event. That is his opinion. That is his analysis. And he is perfectly welcome to that. But the fact that he pays nothing to be able to watch an ESL created, ESL organized, ESL sponsored, if you want to put it in that way, ESL paid for event. The fact that Bulldog can benefit off of that is ludicrous. And the fact that Bulldog sponsors can benefit off of that while ESL gets absolutely screwed while having to pay all of these fees, they now can't even negotiate these exclusive rights, absolutely ruins their ability to continuously operate to you know, get the sponsors that'll keep paying them next month and 2 years down the line and keep them in place.
Now, there's many sides to this debate because, like, what Prophecy says to a certain extent is very true. And I think another part of this discussion what differentiates the Premier League from esports is, again, the IP, because the guys who own the IP are not the tournament organizers. Yes, they put in all the work to host these events, but at the end of the day, it's not their product, it's Valve's product. So they don't have the final say. The Valve's current state of rules is that anybody can stream Dota 2 games through Dota TV as long as you don't use the TO's camera work and you don't... I can't remember the other rule, but it was some arbitrary bullshit thing.
You're only allowed showing in-game stuff. So, like,
yes, in-game.
You're not allowed showing any of the sponsors outside the outside the game content. So, like, none of the funny little things in the halftime, none of the analysis desks, any of that stuff belongs to the TO. But the problem is
right.
that the game underneath, you know, it's like the Premier League is owned by the teams that are in the Premier League. So they own the content of the games themselves, and they are allowed to sell that content to whoever pays the most. In this circumstance, because Valve is the one that owns
Dota,
they own Dota, it doesn't matter whether ESL is the one arranging it. And that's the problem that everybody that we sit with, is that nobody owns soccer. You own the league that plays soccer, but nobody owns soccer. So there's nobody to decide, well, Premier League, you have to do this, or Bundesliga, you have to do this. And that's the difference, is that each of those guys can decide in and of themselves who to sell their rights to, who to, or how to organize, etc., etc. Whereas in esports in general, because the dev owns the game, owns that IP, everybody else is just sort of like, well, you have to follow what the dev says, or otherwise the dev just loses their mind and tells you you can't have anything to do with it.
So that is obviously the differentiation in esports as opposed to normal sports. Something we spoke about like the last three podcasts, I feel like. But I think this discussion specifically is quite an interesting one because there's a lot of arguments being made, and I agree with this, that obviously Bulldog, his fan base, wouldn't actually go to watch the ESL stream because the guys who are there are not there for ESL stream and they're there for Bulldog. And I think another point that's good to mention there, that us on this podcast and anybody who's had this discussion has not actually faulted Bulldog or Gawk, because it's not, this is the opportunity, they've went out of their way to build their brands, and this is, they're playing under the rules that are given to them. They're allowed to do this, and that's what they do. So there's no fault onto Bulldog or Gawk here, right? They have found a success formula here and they're going for it.
I mean, so at best, you could argue that they're unethical, but like that's not against the law.
There's reaching, right?
Yeah, like that's if you really want to get technical, you can argue that they're unethical. But even that is like they're perfectly allowed to do it. Valve insists that they be allowed to do that, so you sort of have to toe the party line and listen to what Valve says.
I mean, so simply put, you could say that, but that is not our opinion on this podcast. Because the fact of the matter is, if you Bulldog or Gawk, you guys get 10,000 viewers every time you put on your stream. You're going to put on the ESL stream and get those same 10,000 viewers. You would do that every fucking time, right? If I was Bulldog, I'd do the same thing. If I was Gawk, I'd do the same thing. I wouldn't give a fuck about what Kyle has to say on the panel, because that's the rules in front of me and I'm making my business ultra profitable. So it's not a knock on them, but on the system as a whole, right? Because a lot of times Valve has spoken up about the broadcast rights thing. I mean, when ESL was issuing DCMAs, they went out of their ways to say nobody can sell the rights to Dota 2 TV's content. So that kind of created the situation where it's a free-for-all, anybody can stream, right?
Yeah.
So on that aspect, it's like, okay, so now it's free content for everybody. And there's a lot of arguments on the side that you can't now monetize, you can't sell broadcast rights and stuff. But there's a lot of perks to it also. I mean, in Kyle's old article, he's like, if he could go on a fucking YouTube or Twitch or whatever and watch Michael Jordan casting or play a fucking basketball game instead of the guys he has to listen to, he'd fucking do it every time, and so would we, right? I mean, there's a lot of times where players like Crit and stuff are streaming games. Sure, these guys don't have massive views in the tens of thousands like Bulldog, but the insight they give into the game is incomparable to the guys on panel, even though they fucking experts on panel and shit. Like, Crit is just so good that you get an insight that you can learn so much more. It's not for everybody, but at least we have that option, and that's something I think I value a lot from the esports world, right, Prophecy?
I mean, that, Duck, that is the one thing that esports offers that traditional sports doesn't, because it would be fascinating to listen to LeBron break down how he was going to, or, you know, how Stephen Curry is playing in a certain game. It would be fascinating to listen to Michael Jordan say, oh, you know, this and this and this is going to happen right now in a Bulls game or something like that. Like, that is one thing that esports has that I don't think you could ever really get in traditional sports, just because of the nature of how traditional sports is set up. But at the same time, you don't want that capability to impact the game's ability to monetize itself and to continue. It's, you know, like, you don't want, oh, this nice little thing, this fascinating little thing, to kill the very way that the game can sustain itself.
Yeah, so that is a big part of the discussion, because like on this podcast and around the esports world, there's always talk about how these fucking third parties struggle. And maybe this is not the 40% number that Kyle gave, even though that he just pulled from his ass. You know, nobody's trying to quote that number, but I don't think it's as big of an effect as people would like to say right now, or we can quantify. But at the same time, the fact that it is a knock-on effect to already very tough set of circumstances for third-party TOs could be an issue. So I mean, I think that part of the argument is fair.
Yeah. The thing is, just the fact that that exists, the fact that you don't have exclusivity, weakens your negotiating position with any sponsor. Because you can't just go to... I mean, he uses it in... Kyle used it in his very own... his Medium article, where it's like, Coke can't go to ESL and say, okay, well, we're willing to sponsor this event for, you know, we're willing to sponsor you for $100 million for the, you know, the next 3 years, but we want exclusivity, because ESL can't promise that. If Bulldog opens a stream and Bulldog is sponsored by Red Bull, well, ESL and Coke are shit out of luck. Valve has declared that anybody can broadcast the game. So if there's a Monster or a Red Bull sponsored person showcasing your event, well, you've just paid $100 million for, well, not exclusivity. So you're going to, you know, fund someone else's ad campaign to a degree.
Which is crazy. Like, I think I was listening to the Trent and Zayori podcast before I came on here, about halfway through. They talk about both the newbie betting thing and the this broadcast rights thing. And I think it's a very interesting podcast for all you guys interested in this topic. You should go listen to it, because Zayori is one of the founding members of Mood Duck. So he works as talent. He's worked as a TO as well, because that's what they are. So he's got a perspective from both sides here. So his thing was, him and Trent, one of the suggestions they had was like, maybe because Trent was saying, even though he's a talent and he works events and stuff, he doesn't want that Crit stream taken away. Honestly, his honest thoughts is that he gets so much value from watching that Crit stream, and he wouldn't want to live in a world where it's gone. So that, like you said, was one of the things that was discussed. So what if there was logos or something in the Dota 2 game, right? There was the Red Bull logos because the Red Bull sponsored event or some shit. But if the Dota TV is still open, that means any Tom, Dick, and Harry can just go and fucking stream that. So let's say, not Bulldog, but let's say some fucking crazy-ass streamer goes and streams with the Red Bull logos, and he's saying F-words and the N-word and just being terrible. It's a bad look for the brand now, because their brand is displayed in a thing where they can't control the content because anybody can look at it. So,
there's no protection.
Like Zayori was saying, it's not a... More eyes is not necessarily a good thing. It's not like a defining factor in this conversation at all.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is, like, the fact that it is open to anybody means that just putting your... I mean, there was a discussion on the CSGO Reddit, I think it was this morning, actually, about a guy asking, well, I mean, could we not do, like, advertising banners in-game, but you make it only spectator side, so... it won't affect the players at all, but if you're watching the game, you'll see a Coke banner across a certain wall, or you'll see a a Red Bull logo on a certain piece of architecture in the game. And that's certainly a possibility. But like you point out, if you have a guy dropping N-bombs and swearing constantly and all the rest, the problem is that those sponsors still have that associated with their name if that's on screen while he's talking. And all you need is somebody to come along, see that, and all of a sudden say, well, Red Bull sponsors a racist, or Coke sponsors a Nazi or something like that.
In this day and age,
you just need it to happen once. And what do you do then? How do you defend yourself at that point?
Because it's not even about the truth, because obviously Red Bull could just make a statement, this wasn't our stream or whatever. It's not about it, because that doesn't matter anymore. Especially brands, it's all about the optics, right? So that 5 minutes of bad press affects your brand so heavily. So the risk is now big. That's why it's like no clear answer for this, because I think that's a great idea, the fact that you could have like Ndota 2 on the floor in the mid lane, you just see like Coca-Cola scroll past in the river or some shit. That'd be sick, like for brands and shit. But at the same time, the risks are high. There's no clear answer. So one of the things that Zayori and Trent recommended was you have a 10-minute delay on Dota TV, actually. So anybody can stream the game, but if you want to watch like a tournament or something, you're watching now 10 minutes delayed. You're like way behind the fucking official stream. So that could be a possibility. It doesn't hurt anybody too heavily, because obviously the Bulldog fans can still be there and hear Bulldogs memes, but the guys who want to watch the games fucking live the way it should be can still go and watch on the official streams.
Yeah, that's definitely a solution. I mean, that is how it was done, especially for rugby in South Africa with the national team, the Springboks. We had SuperSport that paid crazy money to get the rights to host that. And then the SABC, I think they had a half-hour delay on their streams or on their shows. So you could still watch the rugby game, but SABC had to pony up for their own commentators, their own halftime analysis, etc., and build up. The only thing that they bought from SuperSport and the only rules that existed was that their game had to run, I think it was 20 minutes or half an hour behind SuperSport's, and they weren't allowed to use SuperSport's commentary. They could use the video, they could use everything except, I think also the graphics they weren't allowed to use. So if they wanted to do like a replay or something, they had to use their own replay systems. But otherwise, right, the camera angles chosen and all the rest, that was a feed that they got directly from SuperSport.
That's such a great compromise, like in a real world setting, especially like for a sport like rugby in South Africa. It's like massive. I think this conversation is like interesting to me, because on one end, it could be you could take a similar like train of thought like we did with the Overwatch League, like all the people signing up for that, like the teams reporting and stuff. It's like, what are you guys fucking doing? This is a bad business decision. Like, if you're a TO now hosting tournaments, you know the rules already. You don't have exclusive content and stuff. So if you're taking that risk, that's your own fuck up. But at the same time, like, you also have to feel bad for the third parties, even though I think that is a reality. The first part I said is that if you look at guys like WePlay in the Dota 2 world, they fucking broadcast is so good. Like, it's so great. The things that they do are like even ahead of sports in so many categories. They put so much attention to detail and stuff in that it really is worth going to the fucking mainstream. I don't give a fuck who else is casting and doing their funny streams and shit, right?
Yeah.
So you are getting something from it. It's not like, oh no, this guy's just trying to make money or whatever. Obviously, that's every business's purpose, but there is value out of it from the spectator's point of view as well. So there needs to be a compromise at some point that can like fill both. I don't know if we'll ever get that answer or what the next steps are going to be taken. But right now, it just seems like a weird situation, because with the current set of rules, I'm of the strong opinion that you shouldn't be fucking fighting DCMAs and shit about this kind of stuff. The Valve rules are out there. I'm not saying I completely agree with them, but the fact that you're fucking over the little guy, even though not that Gork and Bulldog have been shut down, but I mean, like there was a streamer in Brazil. Like, I'll give you an example here. He streams in Portuguese or Spanish or something. I can't remember. I read the article like 4 days ago. You know, sorry, millennial quick memories here. But he was saying that, like, we play DCMA. He just lost his stream. He lost his YouTube and everything. Obviously, this is not Valve or anybody else's fault. It's DCMA fucking copyright laws or shit. But that he's like shut out now. He's like lose so much content, all this hard work he built. Like, who knows when YouTube are gonna reply to him and stuff. And that's just fucking dirty, man. You cannot be doing that. And I also think other language broadcasts shouldn't be hit that way, because I mean, if you're an official broadcaster and you don't have a fucking stream in Portuguese, Hindi, fucking Spanish, whatever, they should be we should be able to have that option too, you know?
It's just the major problem is that, like, you know, the fact is, yeah, the Hindi stream, for example, let's just take Hindi as an example, right? They can't obviously have a casting pair or a caster for each single language. So you'll get the Hindi guy, but, like, the problem is, if everybody else had to pay for the right to do that stream, is it fair then for the Hindi caster to get his thing for free? You know, it's a difficult question, because sure, he might only appeal to 400 viewers, but the fact is those 400 viewers probably wouldn't be watching without him anyway.
That's why it's like a gray area, right?
It's such a difficult situation, because like you say, you don't want to screw the little guy, but at the same point, you don't want to screw the big guy who's paying for all this shit, because if he goes down, then it doesn't matter what the little
everybody,
guy's done.
Exactly. Everybody gets fucked in. So this conversation is just wild. It is so many aspects. Because even like two things I was thinking about, like similar to the logos and stuff in-game. I mean, let's say you give Bulldog, like Valve put out a statement, okay, if Bulldog wants to stream this, they have to run the same fucking ads as these guys and that shit. But like then again, there's still that risk from the brand's aspect. They're not sponsoring Bulldog. They don't want Bulldog giving them this content. They want ESL because they know what ESL can deliver.
It's the professional thing. They are paying a professional company for a professional broadcast. So the fact that you'll have Bulldog, you know, sitting and chilling and eating chips on his stream, or you know, just like saying stupid shit that doesn't make a lot of sense to anybody that doesn't watch his stream, like they don't want to be sponsoring an event that like is going to be, like you say, it might not even be losing viewers to Bulldog. Bulldog's probably adding viewers to the event, but
right,
it's not the stream that they paid for, and that's the problem.
It is weird, because there is like a certain, so now with Valve's rules, right? I could go, as Kalmachik did, the Dota cast, I could go and stream whatever game I want. Like if the fucking Majors going on right now, I could go on Twitch, start my stream up, and cast like EG versus Na'Vi, for example. I wouldn't do that on Twitch, because I don't think it's actually right. Like it's other content there, there's other people casting, other people putting in work. Why should I just go and do this now? It makes no sense. I would not watch my own stream if this is the situation. But like those other times where I used to stream on YouTube, so obviously the Super Major I casted, me and Rock Lee casted it on YouTube, we just opportunity came up somehow through the grapevine, and we just wanted to do it for fun. So we did it, and we got like massive, like more viewers than I've ever got ever before. Like, and I think the finals we casted had like 2,500 consecutive viewers on YouTube. You can go check the VOD there. It's like 27,000 total views and stuff. And I didn't feel too bad about it, because there was no stream on YouTube available. So we're giving a product, we're giving a service that isn't provided.
Yeah.
Right? But so on a personal front, that didn't feel too bad.
At the same time, Twitch pays for the exclusivity to have that event on their... Well,
at that point, Twitch did not.
Not at that point. Not at that point. But I mean, in future, that could happen. Like if you look at the Overwatch League, that was one of the things that happened. Twitch paid for the exclusive right to have the Overwatch League on their platform because they believed it would increase viewers. Now, in the Overwatch League's case, it didn't happen that way, but that's not to say that it won't in future. So,
because the thing is, like, let's use Facebook stream, the fucking ESL's Facebook stream. We all say, oh, what the fuck? It was the worst experience ever. Reddit hate threads and stuff. But we don't know how much fucking money ESL got. What if ESL got $50 million for that 2-year deal? They're happy with it. And that puts forward their company so fucking far. Even though the viewers were unhappy for 2 years, they can do more now than they had before.
Yeah. The problem is, community cried about it. ESL was forced to backtrack. Valve came in and supported the community in that stead, which means that ESL's now, again, they signed a contract which said, okay, you will get our exclusive rights to our programs or to our programming, and that, like, that promise can't be held up because somebody else decided something different, and it doesn't matter what ESL does, like, they have no rights in this situation. They cannot give it away for free. Well, I cannot give it wholly to Facebook, regardless of how much Facebook paid. And that's 100%. The thing that we are all terrified of that's the thing every TO is terrified of, is that situation, is that you can promise a Twitch, a YouTube, a Mixer, that they get the exclusive rights to your content. And the dev comes out and decides, yeah, no, not really feeling that, eh? I think random streamer A should get the opportunity as well. And it's just like, well, you're now fucked. Your $50 million contract, which relies entirely on the exclusive right to host that content, is now broken because you can't guarantee them exclusivity. How do you deal with that? It's not your fault, but you're the one that has to reap the consequences. And the little streamer A, who's paid none of this, has done none of the deals, has done, like, you know, has maybe put in a little bit of effort to make his stream look a bit better. He's the one that's going to profit at the end of the day from all of your hard work that you now are massively prevented from doing.
Because that is the biggest irony of all this, right? Is that I'm sure ESL and the Wii Players and the fucking Epicenters and shit spend so much money to make these events happen, the great production and stuff. But I'm pretty sure they're all mostly losing money. And the Gorks
they're losing money hand over fist. The stats that came out for ESL, when was it? I think it was late last year. They were trying to sell to a Chinese company because I think the group that owns ESL, the esports side, had lost, I don't want to lie, I think it was 16 million US.
So they're definitely losing money. That's a fact.
They are bleeding from a dozen different wounds at this point. And COVID has done nothing to help them. Yeah, it's maybe reduced a lot of their costs at this point, which has helped them. But at the end of the day, it's still not like a good situation for them.
100%. So these guys are losing money hosting these quote-unquote professional events. And the average streamer, that guy's canning it. Not the average streamer, the Bulldogs and the Corps. These guys make thousands of dollars a day, like easily. Yeah. So it is pretty hilarious there. I will say, though, even though I do feel for all these companies and shit, from a viewer's point of view, I wouldn't want to see the sort of like open, quote unquote, open source way completely gone. I mean, just in general in life, I like open source products. I think it's a great way of thinking. I'm not a big fan of copyright. So I feel like the open circuit is great. Obviously, not having exclusivity does hurt the third parties. I don't know how big, because then again, viewership isn't everything as well for TOs. But I do think we can add to this conversation, maybe not the whole fucking night we're going to go on about this, but just a small thing you have to add, maybe close to the end of this podcast, is that I do think there needs to be other forms of monetization. I feel like when Valve tournaments were most successful, in terms of for TOs at least, TOs could sell hats tickets and stuff through in-game tickets, hats. There was other ways to monetize. It's not like fucking running a Dota 2 tournament was always a fucking money pit dragger, like death to you and your family's heritage for the next 100 years because you're so far in debt from hosting a Dota 2 tournament. Wasn't always like that. There was other ways to profit. And I think that needs to be more creative, because although we play and ESL put on these professional events that can rival sports and better them in a lot of cases, I don't think that is the way the future of esports needs to go. I don't think we need to be the next fucking NBA. I just think we need to be creative and use different forms of monetizing.
The problem is we just need the devs to allow that. Because remember, the TOs could create their own tickets. They could sell their own tickets. Those tickets could come with in-game cosmetics. This is in CSGO and Dota in particular. And Valve just took that away from them.
Yep, and that's the horrible thing, because like this is the issue. This is the crux of the issues in esports, is that the sports model does not work. Nobody will fucking make money in the sports model. This is fact. If ESL can't do it, nobody fucking can. But the alternative needs the publishers, the fucking Valves, the Riots, and etc., to play ball with the third party. And why would they? I mean, Dota Plus is the perfect example of this. I can't name you a product shitter than Dota Plus, Prophecy. Yet we've had 700,000 people subscribe to it during its fucking existence. Valve, with a product that they put maybe 5 minutes worth of effort into, make huge money from it.
Stupid money.
Stupid money. Money for free, because they don't even fucking do anything with it. So now this is always the issue. Like we spoke about Riot a week ago, is that we can talk about 1,000 different fucking issues with the Overwatch League. But for Blizzard, they're not affected by any of them, because they've made their money. The teams have bought in. They're getting their sponsorship cut. They take their revenue before any other teams get it. Like, it's a fuck up for everybody else. But the publishers, they live and they fucking canning it, man.
Yep. And they'll keep canning it because they own the IP, and there's nothing, you know, like the way IP laws are structured, it means that they will, unless they are the most charitable group of human beings in the entire history of humanity, there's no way that they have any incentive to give up those IP rights to the TOs.
I mean, Valve can't even fucking embed a stream. The DPCs, their own fucking sponsored events in the DPC, they can't embed a stream in the client. That was the best major numbers we've ever had in Dota 2 by far. Sure, it's not realistic numbers because, again, it's embedded in the fucking game. But it helps. It helps. They have just embedded the stream for their own promoted tournaments. What a big difference that would make in viewership profits. Just right there and then.
No, it definitely would. But the problem is, again, there's no incentive for them to do it. You know, if there was a reason for them to give up a portion of the IP rights regarding the broadcasting of an event, or if there was a law saying that you had to do, you know, like just a tiny portion of the IP, not as in you have to give up any right to sell or any, you know, nothing big, just a small enough portion that the TOs could actually have some level of IP rights in and of themselves, even if they pay for it at the end of the day. You know, let's say that they have to pay Valve $10 million a year, for example, to run Dota events, but they are then allowed to monetize those Dota tournaments to the fullest effect. How much more incentive would there be? And you'd see which events would be the ones that ESL would want to try and sponsor, would want to try and make money out of. Because they themselves would then be incentivized. You know, we're going to put on a Dota event. We've paid $10 million a year. We get, let's say you get 5 Dota events per year for ESL for $10 million. Then they are incentivized to do their absolute best, A, to put on a good show, and B, to profit off of that good show. And they have perfectly legitimate reasons to, or, you know, they have a perfectly stable environment in which to do that. They've got every reason to try and make the broadcast look the best, to create all the extra little content, because if they don't create that, people don't buy in and people don't spend money, which means that they make far less.
Yeah, and then if ESL don't want to do it, fucking WePlay picks up the stack. Exactly. They get the fucking contract the next year, right? You're creating a fucking competitive environment. Even with the hats thing, like the selling chests and getting in-game tickets and stuff for the TOs, Valve could say tomorrow, this is a possibility. We TOs are allowed to do this. 40% of the money goes to Valve, right? Not the greatest deal for TOs, but it's still better than what we have. Valve are getting free money then because they're not defending. I mean, actually, a perfect example of this is actually something that exists, right? The Valve concept with the Steam Workshop is the utopia, right? Developers go out of their way, they make the items and shit, it goes into the games, you get a share of the money going to the guys who create, the artists who create the things, and then there's games for us fucking Battle Pass fanatics buying the hats, and like everybody wins in the situation. Valve have the right idea here, but they fucked that up also because they stopped supporting the workshop artists properly. They're not giving you enough credit. They're not doing the right thing. So this great idea that they fucking had themselves is going to the wayside.
Yeah. The problem is they want more money at the end of the day, and nobody can deny them that. They have the IP. They have full control. But that is unfortunately the problem. And we have to figure out a way to, A, help out the TOs, B, help out the teams. Because those are the guys at the end of the day that are footing 99% of the costs in terms of these events, especially for Valve games. League of Legends, Overwatch, a couple of the other ones, yeah, maybe the devs do put do pony up more there. But on the other hand, they control that those environments entirely, so you're forced to play by their rules. And that's just where we sit right now. It's like there has to be a breaking point somewhere that We're not asking it for it to be unfair in favor of the TOs and the teams.
Yeah, by no
just,
means.
Just like just make it fair. That's all we want. Just make it fair.
There has to be a middle ground somewhere. Something has to give. Yeah. I mean, I, as a Dota fan, love TI more than anything. But you really, with the current state of trajectory right now, we could see a world where TI is the only fucking tournament that exists. Yeah. I mean, I do think TOs are still going to be dumb enough to be running events, losing money for the next 10 years still. So not a near future. But at the same time, that is not a reality I want to live in. You know,
the thing is, we want the good TOs to survive. We don't want, you know, like if you're crap and you put on a bad show and nobody wants to buy in and then your company goes down for that reason, fine. That's like any business. If your business is bad, And then, it, you know, you can't rely on handouts to keep you alive. We're not asking for handouts. We're just asking to, like, give us a bone in terms of the TOs and the teams. You know, because if they can do that, it incentivizes them to do a lot more to create ancillary content around their events and all the rest, and to make their event as good as possible rather than just, like, go to, you know, like, the cheapest tiny little event and make certain that, you know, these two teams are there. Because that's the way it works at the moment, is if you don't get, for example, the Navis or all the rest, like, Navi just brings such a huge amount of viewers that, like, whether they're bad or good, you have to invite them every single time.
I mean, we actually had discussions in South Africa that we should invite fucking international team, one international team coming to play a South African tournament in Dota or CS or whatever. We'll create more viewership than our entire scene combined just because people want to watch those good teams. Like, this is the kind of thinking you have, like, from a South African perspective. So at the end of this podcast, all we like to say is look for a mutually beneficial situation.
So that's all we ask for. Just throw us a bone. And help us, you know, like, or help the TOs, help the devs put on a better show all around.
Yeah, because there has to be one out. There has to be one out.
I mean, there has to be a solution. It can't just be one-sided.
So that is a pretty PMA way we can end, you know, looking forward towards the future. I like it. So that's it. Episode number 86. Prof, anything you'd like to add before we kick the bucket and send this podcast away?
Not particularly. I think we got our points across pretty well.
All right. So that's it. That is episode number 86. Ladies and gentlemen, it's our absolute pleasure to bring you this one. Don't forget to follow us on the Twitters. Me at KChickte, at Snare, who apparently is on this podcast every now and again, is at _Snare_. And of course, we have Prophecy at Prophecy Gaming with the CI instead of the normal spelling of Prophecy. And the publication, don't forget them. Esports Central ZA on Facebook, on Twitter, esportscentrl, and on the World Wide Web at esportscentral.co.za. So keep up with the latest and greatest esports news in SA. Thank you all for listening to this week's episode. Till the next one. Goodbye.